perhaps vigilante violence, more racist violence from cops, all these menaces, and God knows what could be unleashed overseas by General Mattis and Trump. This could easily have swung the other way, and it can still swing the other way. You know, when the pendulum goes this far, the energy is gathered, and it's poised to swing almost as far back in the other direction. And I think that's where we are politically now. 4 years from now, sooner, we could be talking about a revolution of a different sort in a much more constructive direction. But we have to make that happen.
Journalist Alan Nair and Black Lives Matter founder Alicia Garza, Professor Kianga Yamata-Taylor, Naomi Klein, and Ralph Nader. To binge watch our 12 hours of special coverage from the inauguration and the Women's March on Washington, go to democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Berkner, Min Shay, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdien, Dina Gezder, Sam Alkoff, Robbie Karen, Honey Masood, Trina Nduren, Andre Lewis, Julie Crosby. Thanks to our crew here in New York, Trina and Dennis Moynihan and John Hamilton and Nicole Salazar. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for having me.
Good morning, honey, you old gloomy sight. Good morning.
KABU Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Real Cool Film Series at the Clinton Street Theater. The film this month is Lady Sings the Blues, showing Monday, January 23rd at 7 p.m. Diana Ross portrays jazz singer Billie Holiday in this biographical drama. The film depicts her early attempts at a singing career and her eventual rise to stardom, as well as her difficult relationships and drug addiction. Again, that's Lady Sings the Blues, Monday, January 23rd at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KABU Evening News.
Coming up on the KABU Evening News, millions of people around the world marched and demonstrated over the weekend to protest the new Trump presidency and in defense of women's rights and gender equity.
The Senate is expected to vote soon to confirm Republican Congressman Mike Pompeo as the new director of the Central Intelligence Agency.
Portland Asians for Black Lives is hosting a Lunar New Year week of action this week. Later in the newscast, we'll have members of Asians for Black Lives live in our studio to discuss the event.
Good evening. This is the KABU Evening News for Monday, January 23rd, 2017. I'm Charity Marchant.
And I'm Ken Jones. On Saturday, a crowd estimated at 100,000 people marched peacefully through the streets of Portland to protest the new Trump presidency and in defense of women's rights and gender equity. The peaceful march on Saturday, estimated to be one of the largest in Oregon's history, was in sharp contrast to protests on Friday night when police used pepper spray, smoke bombs, and stun grenades to disperse crowds rallying against President Trump on Inauguration Day. The march Saturday coincided with protests around the country, including nearly a million people in Washington, D.C., 150,000 in Chicago, and more than 100,000 in New York, Seattle, Boston, and Los Angeles. We'll have more on the protests coming up on tonight's newscast, including an in-depth report at 5:45.
In a coordinated series of demonstrations Saturday, millions of people took to the streets Saturday as part of a worldwide women's march. From small towns in Alaska to major metropolitan areas around the country and the world, protesters turned out in solidarity with the massive march in Washington, D.C. Estimates compiled by university researchers range from more than 3 million to nearly 5 million people took part in the day of action. Organizers put the total at more than 5 million. The total number notwithstanding, the turnout was massive, with a progressive and inclusive platform focused on workers' rights, reproductive rights, immigrant rights, environmental justice, and more. Women responded to the call, as did their allies, to send a strong message that women's rights are human rights. Reporters from Free Speech Radio News fanned out and attended multiple marches. Sean Kenang talked with people at the St. Petersburg, Florida march. Joe Crawford spoke with attendees in Indianapolis, Indiana. Andrew Steller was in Oakland, and Tanya Castle covered the march in Montreal, Canada.
Donald Trump! Judith LeBlanc, and I'm a proud member of the Caddo Tribe of Oklahoma and the director of the Native Organizers Alliance. And I march for my daughter Jenna, my nieces Nora, Marie, and Victoria. We march today for Mother Earth, because water is life. Standing Rock has shown the world our faith, our prayers. People power is stronger than rubber bullets.
Hey, everyone. I'm Senator Tammy Duckworth. You guys look great. By the way, I wore my Don't F With Me jacket to this rally, because this is full of a bunch of people who are saying the same thing. You know, yesterday, I got to tell you, I was pretty depressed. And I looked at my baby girl. I brought my daughter here today because this is her first protest. She's 2 years old. Exactly. So all the girls and boys out there, thanks for coming out. This is about our country. I didn't shed blood to defend this nation. I didn't give up literally parts of my body to have the Constitution trampled on. I did not serve along with the men and women in our armed forces. We did not serve to protect the Constitution, but to have them roll back our rights. And this is what it's about. It's about you going home after today and standing up and fighting in your communities. Don't take what you do today and don't let it end. Take it home. Run for office yourself. Get out there and be those voices. Be that change that you want to see in the world. They're not going to roll back the Americans with Disabilities Act, because without the ADA, I would not be here today.
Tiffany Horton, and I live in Plant City, Florida. Well, I believe in equal rights for women, and I want my daughter to know that we are equal, and we shouldn't even be fighting this fight. We should already have equal rights.
My name is Rick Kreisman. I'm the mayor of the great city of St. Petersburg.
Stand up, fight back!
So I'm here to stand with thousands of people here that are really wanting to speak with a loud voice and say that women's rights matter, that this is a city of opportunity where the sun shines at all. We want the country to be the same way. And so this is, I think, everybody really coming together and saying, we're going to be watching what's happening, and the country is paying attention. And these are important issues to all of us. And so I'm just overwhelmed by this turnout.
So my name is Maquiba Reese. Well, I'm originally from Fort Wayne, and I live and work in Bloomington. What brings me here today is the fact that I'm African-American, so my ancestors marched. And then I'm also a woman, so my other ancestors, my sisters, as far as women, we need equality. And I wanted to come down and partake, not just because I'm a female, but because we possess so much community with working together. I feel like I'm liberated when I'm here together with my sisters and brothers. And I think that we can create the change that we want to see. And so this is my step. I am advocating for women's rights. I think a lot of people were hesitant to vote in a woman as a presidential hopeful. And I think that demonstrated that we still have a lot to come to work out. And I think now is the time to see that women are just as strong, vocal, and as much for the people too.
My name is Elaine Bander. I'm actually a dual citizen. I spent my first 17 years in the U.S. And although I'm a very proud and grateful Canadian, it breaks my heart to see what's happening there. And my philosophy has always been, you protest when you can, while you can, because God knows it soon may become illegal in Trump's America.
My name is Anita Gail Jones. I live in Novato, Marin County. Well, I'm just in shock that this is even happening, and it's just a visceral disbelief that the man is actually in the White House, and that half the country thought he should be there. And he's there, he rode his way to power on a lie, the birther lie, when you just look at the basics. And it's really about race, and nobody wants to talk about that. Nobody wants to really admit that. But at the core, this is about race. It's about having a black man in the White House for 8 years.
My name is Laurel Schwartzbach.
I'm from Placerville, California. Everything that I care about is kind of being threatened right now. A huge concern is the environment and the denial of climate change. Also, having a president that is disrespectful of so many human rights, women's rights, disabled people's rights, gay, transgender, lesbian rights, every kind of rights that I can think of is not acceptable.
And so, I want to thank all of you for being here today. Are you ready for the fight? Are you up to the fight? Are you going to continue the fight? Thank you all so very much.
Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, or CREW, a governmental watchdog organization, filed a lawsuit today in U.S. District Court against President Trump. The suit alleges that the president is violating the Constitution emoluments clause by accepting payments from foreign governments. CREW also accused newly inaugurated President Trump of already being in violation of the U.S. Constitution over his lease of a Washington, D.C. hotel owned by the government. They filed a complaint regarding the lease arrangements on Friday with the Federal General Services Administration. In related news, the Senate hopes to vote tonight on the nomination of Congressman Mike Pompeo to head the CIA. Pompeo had stated he would be willing to reconsider the current ban on waterboarding and other forms of torture. He also previously called CIA agents who engaged in waterboarding Iraqi prisoners patriots. Pompeo is currently a Republican congressman representing Kansas. President Trump also issued three executive orders today, including a federal hiring freeze, a ban on federal monies from going to any international organization that either advises that abortion's an option or that performs abortions, and an order withdrawing the U.S. from the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Accord. Trump also stated he'll soon meet with Canadian and Mexican leaders to renegotiate the decades-old NAFTA trade agreement.
The newly inaugurated President Trump today took the first step to pulling out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Activists have pushed for years to strengthen the Trans-Pacific Partnership and are concerned about the corporate involvement in the Trump regime's trade policy. For more, KBOO's Jinka Soderberg spoke with Adam Weissman of Trade Justice.
So do you see this move by Donald Trump on his first day as a victory for the trade justice movement?
Ending TPP certainly is the culmination of a six-year fight on the part of trade justice activists to expose a trade agreement that really was a backroom deal for the 1%, that was not going to deliver the jobs that it promised, that was not the progressive trade deal that President Obama made it out to be, but that was a trade deal that was going to empower corporations to attack our environmental laws and international tribunals. That was a trade deal that was going to outsource more jobs to sweatshops, including in countries with abysmal records on human trafficking and forced labor. That was going to raise the price of medicines, including limiting access to life-saving drugs to some of the world's poorest people. That was going to really undermine democracy in favor of expanding corporate power. So the death of TPP is good news for the planet, is good news for consumers, is good news for workers, and is a clear sign of the power of people's organizing. This trade agreement was not ended by Donald Trump. This trade agreement was ended by a people's movement that worked long and hard for 6 years to drag the secretly negotiated, media-ignored trade deal out of the shadows, and that forced it into the spotlight in the 2016 election, to the point where Hillary Clinton, who had on 45 occasions expressed support for TPP, even had to come out against TPP, and where Donald Trump saw an opportunity to capitalize on his admittedly long-standing opposition to trade deals like TPP as a winning issue to appeal to the anger at voters who've been screwed over by deals like NAFTA and who recognize TPP as more of the same.
Well, and in the pullout of the Trans-Pacific Partnership on his first business day in office, Trump is also doing that in the context of meeting with a number of business leaders, including the head of Ford, Elon Musk from SpaceX, Michael Dell of Dell Technologies, representatives from Johnson & Johnson, Lockheed Martin, Dow Chemical, U.S. Steel, many, many companies, and calling for a deregulation regime. That is the direction that he is hoping to go in. So what does the pullout of the Trans-Pacific Partnership really mean as far as workers' rights and trade justice, if this is the context that it comes in?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. I think it's really notable that on the same day that Donald Trump pulled out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, he is also signing an executive order to put a freeze on wages for federal employees and a freeze on federal hiring. So he's, on the one hand, trying to dismantle government, on the other hand, attacking federal workers, showing his level of respect for government workers, which can, the people who ultimately are going to be working for him, which speaks volumes right there. So I think that that just says a lot about his overall agenda, that a big part of the Trans-Pacific Partnership was to push an agenda of deregulation in certain areas while adding regulation in areas that benefited corporations, for example, increasing intellectual property rules on medicines. The question really remains, will a NAFTA renegotiation be just another vehicle for pro-corporate deregulation, or will this actually be something that that pushes an agenda that we can really support? Part of the problem with deregulation-oriented trade deals that even Trump should realize is that ultimately you're driving a race to the bottom when you don't have rules in place, that jobs are going to go to wherever the jobs are going to relocate to the lowest wage markets, the lowest regulation markets. And he may think, and as much as he pushes for deregulation, there'll always be markets with lower wages and less regulations. So what we ultimately, unless Donald Trump expects people in the U.S. to be living on starvation wages, in which case I wonder who he thinks is going to be staying at his hotels. He certainly isn't going to benefit from that scenario. So the reality is the only way that trade is really going to work, the only way that we can have a trade agenda that's going to lead to positive reform that will benefit everyone, is instead of pushing for a global race to the bottom, actually using trade policy to raise global standards.
Adam, you sound more optimistic than many of the people we've talked with about this regime. Why do you feel some hope about what is coming upon us in these coming years?
Yeah, I'm not in any way trying to give anyone the impression that I think the Trump administration is not absolutely committed to an agenda of advancing the interests of the wealthy elites, that Donald Trump is not a real danger, that his agenda of bigotry and xenophobia is not one that we're going to need to fight tooth and nail, that on every front of the progressive agenda, we're going to see serious attacks. What I am saying is that I think in terms of trade issues, we've seen the strength of popular movements, and there is the advantage of having opposition on both the left and the right. And I'm not saying in that regard that trade is exceptional. I think that we have a fight on our hands right now, and I think that the flip side to Trump's election is that grassroots movements are growing stronger and stronger. We had hundreds of people arrested on Friday protesting in Washington, D.C. Friday at the inauguration. Hundreds of thousands in the streets at the women's marches. Yeah, the Trump administration has consolidated real power at this point, and that's a real danger. But I also think of crisis that movements grow stronger and that organizing gets more powerful. I think we're going to see some hard times again, but I also think if we keep growing the resistance, what ultimately happens is up to us. And I think we cannot resign ourselves to accepting defeat, but we just need to use this as a moment to recommit ourselves and fight even harder.
Well, thanks very much. Again, I've been speaking with Adam Weissman. He is with Trade Justice, their website, tradejustice.net, about the decision by Donald Trump today to pull out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade agreement. This is Jenka Soderberg with KBOO News.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast at 6 for Labor Radio, radio of the working class, by the working class, and for the working class. That's followed at 6:30 by Prison Pipeline, presenting a unique understanding of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime, and challenging the status quo. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tonight's weather, patchy fog after 10 p.m., otherwise partly cloudy, with a low around 33. Tomorrow, patchy fog before 10 a.m., otherwise partly sunny, with a high near 44. Today in history, in 1849, Elizabeth Blackwell became the first woman in America to receive a medical degree, graduating at the top of her class from Geneva Medical College in New York. And in 1964, the 24th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, which eliminated the poll tax in federal elections, was ratified. The quote of the day is from Elizabeth Blackwell, who said, "If society will not admit of woman's free development, then society must be remodeled."
And now we hear the latest in worker-related news from our friends at laborradio.org.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a Diversified Media Enterprises production. I'm Doug Cunningham. More than 2.5 million people greeted America's new president with worldwide protests against all that he stands for over the weekend. The Women's March on Washington drew 500,000 people, and protests happened in cities across the United States and the world. In D.C., Ashley Judd read a poem from 19-year-old Tennessean Nina Donovan that played off Trump's "nasty woman" campaign comment.
I am a nasty woman. I am not as nasty as racism, fraud, conflict of interest, homophobia, sexual assault, transphobia, white supremacy, misogyny, ignorance, white privilege.
The Women's March on Washington sent a strong message of protest and resistance to the new American government, a nonviolent shot across the bow symbolizing the resistance to come. A union election is coming for 2,850 production workers at Boeing's South Carolina plant. The International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers has filed for an NLRB election. The union called for an election at the plant back in April of 2015 after what the IAM said was unprecedented political interference in the election by anti-union South Carolina politicians. But Boeing workers stayed in touch with union organizers, and a new union election will be scheduled. The IAM's Frank Larkin said when the 2015 election was postponed that the workers in South Carolina who want a union will have one, even if it takes multiple elections to get it.
It's not unusual for a union organizing campaign to go through several election cycles before they achieve collective bargaining. The Boeing campaign in South Carolina obviously has a lot of components to it, including the opposition to it. It's not a campaign that began and ended with the first couple of months that we were there. And during a campaign, a company can make any promises they want. And after the campaign ceases, the company is free to reverse those decisions. Ultimately, many of the workers there expect they will have a union contract.
Brought to you by the IBEW, 725,000 men and women powering the way for an American comeback. Information on how to become an International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Power Professional is online at ibew.org.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
Brought to you by unionjobs.com, posting jobs for unions, socially allied, and community organizations since 1997.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The Supreme Court today announced that it has decided to not hear a case challenging a voter ID law in the state of Texas. The current Texas law requires voters to present specific forms of government-issued ID in order to cast a ballot. Plaintiffs in the case of Abbott v. Veazey argue that the Texas law violates portions of the Voting Rights Act that prohibit discrimination based on race. Lower courts agreed, so the state of Texas asked the Supreme Court to hear the case. Chief Justice John Roberts issued a separate statement about today's denial, suggesting that the court could take up the case in the future. Roberts noted that some issues in the case are still being argued in lower courts. The change in government is also a factor. The Obama administration had been one of the plaintiffs challenging the law. It's not yet known whether the new administration will continue the challenge.
It's Lunar New Year week, marking a time of renewal and connection for many communities here in Portland. One local group is using the occasion to bring connection with their community around the topic of Asian and Black solidarity. This week, Portland Asians for Black Lives is hosting a Lunar New Year Week of Action, where they've invited the Asian and Asian American community to join them in a series of dinners. There will be discussions around the importance of supporting Portland's Black community. Here with us in studio is Amico Padillo and Barbie Wu, members of Portland Asians for Black Lives, along with the Reverend Dr. Leroy Haynes from the Albina Ministerial Alliance Coalition. Thank you all for being here tonight. How are you doing?
Good, thank you.
Wonderful. Good. Well, first off, what is Portland Asians for Blacks?
We're a collective of Asians and Asian Americans who have come together after Ferguson and the Black Lives Matter movement has started, and we're trying to stand in solidarity with Black communities and do work to promote anti-Black racism within Asian and Asian American communities, and trying to educate our peers and people in our communities that our liberation depends on the liberation of Black people. And so we're doing a lot of solidarity work.
That's wonderful. Can you briefly talk about New Year and why you chose this week to highlight that solidarity?
Yeah, so I think the Lunar New Year for at least my family in Taiwan has always been a time where we gather together and we celebrate the togetherness of family, and we want to, you know, extend that to our minority families out there as well, and just, you know, like making sure that all families are able to be together and celebrate each other and, you know, have a good new year. And so we're having a week of dinners, where our first one starts tonight at Steakadelphia. And we have a few more dinners on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday as well. And we are donating to three different organizations that we have chosen. And yeah, like, we would just like to do something for the Black
Panther. Yeah, what are those organizations?
Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, they're All African People's Revolutionary Party, Oregon, Black Lives Matter Portland, Sankofa Collective Northwest.
Nice, nice. Sounds like you've got a lot of organizing that's been going on. What types of events? It's just strictly dinner? Are there other intersecting events that are happening?
Yeah, there are a couple of rallies at the end of the week on Friday and Saturday that we're endorsing and supporting. The first one is happening Friday, the one-year anniversary of Christopher Kalonji's murder by police in Oak Grove, Oregon, and the AMA march and rally that Dr. Haynes can speak more about.
Mr. Reverend, or excuse me, Dr. Reverend, you've been really quiet over there. Why is it so important to have these types of community discussions?
Well, first of all, the Obama Ministerial Alliance Coalition for Justice and Reform has been on the battlefield in the city of Portland for over 12 years, starting with the Kendra James case, the Aaron Campbell case, the James Chassie case. We are also plaintiffs and amicus in the suit against the Portland Police Bureau that was filed with the Department of Justice. And so we have continued to struggle for police accountability and the issues of justice and the criminal justice system in our community. On Saturday, the 28th, we will have a march called Justice and Equality March that will take place at 10 a.m. at the Convention Center near the metro and the statue of Martin Luther King. And then we would march down Grand into Martin Luther King Boulevard and back to the Maranatha Church. This rally will focus on the issue of continuous pressing the issue of justice. We have a criminal justice system that is in need of changes and transformation. We have the President Trump has appointed Session as the coming in U.S. Attorney General, who has a history of anti-civil rights, a history of prosecuting civil rights workers that marched with King, a history going against the voting rights law of the 68 voting rights bill, and is supportive of what is going on in Alabama for suppression of the votes. And he also has very clearly said in his hearing, he does not believe that the Department of Justice should be involved in cases like that's happened in Portland. So we will see a pulling back. And so we're saying basically, we will not go backward. We will not go backward. We want to continue to push forward. And this rally offer opportunity for voices of the 25 members of the coalition, organization, and activists to be able to speak to the new President Trump coming in and his administration, that this is a movement that will continue. It is like what Victor Hugo, the great French literary artist, said, that when the idea of time has come, no force on earth can stop it. The time for police accountability and changes and transformation of the criminal justice system has come.
That's powerful. So how many rallies in all will be ending Lunar Week? Is it just the one? Sounds like there might be a couple others.
I'm not as aware as the many others.
For us, we're supporting the 1 year anniversary of Christopher Kalonji on Friday, okay, and then their AMA rally with Dr. Haynes on Saturday.
Great. I really like hearing about and just feel really moved about the histories of civil rights, and it does indeed feel like there's been a huge pushback to just return about 100 or 200 years before. Can you tell our listeners about the history between Asian Pacific Islanders and African Americans joining together in community and upholding civil rights?
I was just sharing with them as one of the co-organizers of the Black Panther Party in the state of Texas that there were clear coalitions with the we had Japanese Black Panther parties, Asian Black Panther parties, Brown Berets. We had Native Indian Black Panther parties. We had the White Patriot Panther Party. And so there were always those formations of coalitions, and even going back to the Civil Rights Movement, those coalitions existed. So there's a rich history there of coalitions on the issue of justice and the issues of equality that existed in our movement. And the civil rights, post-civil rights movement, when we talk about the modern civil rights movement, we have to go back to those times of Dr. King that birthed those movements and began to be the lightning rod to initiate transformation in our nation.
That's lovely. I love the term lightning rod. I'm going to just keep that visually as a... as a just a symbol for myself going forward. Can you tell us a little more about Asians for Black Lives? Is it a national organization or just?
It's not a national organization. There are other Asians for Black Lives groups doing the same work in other cities, but we're not a national organization that's organizing together. We're all individual
collectives,
collectives, but with the same mission. And we're all really trying to fight back against the model minority myth and trying to, you know, keep in mind that any rights we've won as Asians and Asian Americans has been won on the backs of Black struggles. And we just always try to keep that in mind with the work that we do.
Mm. And can you give us more details one more time, or just remind our audience about where they can find out more about Lunar New Year and what you're doing?
Yeah, if you would just go to our Facebook page, which is Portland Asians for Black Lives, there are all of the informations you need for any of the dinners this week, and also the rally information for both Friday and Saturday as well.
And if listeners want to support your efforts, what can they do about that?
Yeah, check out our Facebook page and maybe look into the organizations that we're donating to and look into AMA, you know, if you want to be involved. I feel like funds are always needed at all of these organizations and collectives. So if you can donate money, please do. But then if you can show up to rallies, like, we were more than happy to have you.
That's great. Is there anything else that you would like to share?
Yes, I'd just like to say about the march on Saturday the 28th, that will start at Holiday and Grand on at the Convention Center. This will be a family-friendly march, and so parents can bring their children, their babies, and it will be an opportunity to get them early started in the movement for justice and equality.
Is there anything going on Tuesday nights?
Yeah, that we might have missed? But there's another dinner, and it's at Dub St. John, and we still have lots of spots available. We also want to specify that these dinners, we're trying to get Asians and Asian American communities to come out to these dinners, because we are trying to create this space for each other to have these important conversations.
That has a shared background and that you can feel safe to, you know, share about your personal history as well.
Exactly. And other POCs, non-Asian POCs are welcome, but and we're asking white folks to, you know, leave that space for us as Asians and Asian Americans to come together, and POCs, and to support these restaurants in their own ways, in their own time.
Wonderful. If you could give our public one call to action going forward into 2017, what would it be?
I would say keep moving forward, not backward. There are the forces, dark forces, and anti-democratic forces, and our country that want us to turn the clock back to the days of the old South in our country. And we're saying we will not accept that. We will resist that. And we will continue to move forward as a nation.
I feel like just keep yourself educated. You know, there are ways for you to be more involved with all of the movements that are going on. Just, you know, if you feel unbalanced, then do something about it.
And I say dedicate yourself to long-term work. Get involved. Don't think that they're just, you could go to a rally and problems will be solved by you going there. I think you need to really make dedication to working on long-term work with groups and getting involved in communities and supporting communities that are already doing work, and to for white folks not to put all the work on POCs backs, because it, you know, that needs to change in itself. So
hear, hear. Thank you so much for being here with us. This has been Amiko Badil and Barbie Wu from Portland Asians for Black Lives, and Reverend Dr. Leroy Haynes from the Albina Ministerial Alliance Coalition. You can find out more about the Lunar New Year Week of Action on Facebook. You can also find more info about the AMA Coalition March and Rally for Justice and Equality happening this Saturday at 10 a.m. starting in front of the Martin Luther King Jr. statue on Facebook.
Friday was Inauguration Day, and as Donald Trump was being sworn in as president, protesters gathered in the streets in cities around the world. The demonstration in Portland on Friday night started at Pioneer Square. Before the night was over, Portland police in riot gear had attacked demonstrators with tear gas, stun grenades, and smoke bombs. I was there reporting for KBOO Radio and filed this report. Friday was Inauguration Day, and shortly after Donald Trump was sworn in as president, protesters gathered in Portland's Pioneer Square for an anti-Trump rally and march. I was there with a recorder and talked with several of the protesters. All these interviews were conducted while we were gathered in the square and before the march began. You'll also hear my direct report after the march ended at the western end of the Burnside Bridge. Marchers were stopped from advancing on the bridge by a line of police in riot gear. The police set off flashbangs and directed pepper spray at the marchers. You'll hear all that in a few seconds. First, I want to let you know that I was also at Portland's Women's March on Saturday as a participant. While the Inauguration Day protest drew an estimated crowd of 10,000, there were about 100,000 people at the march on Saturday. The Saturday march was also 100% peaceful. The Saturday march organizers had a permit from the city of Portland, and there was a planned and approved route from Waterfront Park through downtown Portland by way of 4th Avenue. By contrast, there was no permit or approved route for Friday's march, and the march ended somewhat more abruptly, as you'll hear for yourselves. Again, here's my report from Friday. Did you want to give a first name and where you're from? And
yeah, I'm Tim. I live in Portsmouth.
Oh, and what are you doing here?
Well, I'm signing up people for the Portland Tenants United. We're a tenants union. We're a solidarity organization. We organize together, and we try to keep the rent from getting too damn high.
Oh, great. And you're coming out to the Trump inauguration protest.
Yep, that's right.
Have you already gotten a lot of signups?
Yeah, no, I'm on multiple pages of people who have given me their names, their emails, and who want to get more involved in helping each other, because we can't expect help to come from on high.
Had a chance to talk with anybody yet about issues other than rent control and why they might be here?
Yeah, no, I think people are here for all sorts of reasons. There's so much to hate and to oppose in Donald Trump and his new administration. It's like it's a beautiful tapestry of people who are going to need to resist for the next at least 4 years to keep Portland a place that we want to live in.
Let me just ask you, for cable listeners who are upset with the inauguration today and are not looking forward to the next 4 years, what can they do locally, politically, to kind of do something constructive?
Join a union. Join a civil organization. Join a tenants union like the one that I promote.
Did you want to give a website or something like that?
You can find us on Facebook. That's the easiest way.
Okay.
We are Portland Tenants United. Check us out. Join maybe the Democratic Socialists of America. That's an excellent way to be engaged. Portland Resistance is a cool organization. There's Eugene V. Debs, the most successful socialist candidate ever to run for presidency of the United States in the 1920s. He said that confusing voting for a socialist with socialism was like confusing a menu for the meal. Just because you've picked something once every 4 years doesn't mean you take advantage of it.
Right.
Doesn't mean that you're participating in it. Democracy demands more of us than we give it now, and the fruits will be great. But we got to get engaged.
I noticed that you're passing something out, Solidarity Trump's Hate. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So it's a newspaper, Socialist Worker. You can find it at socialistworker.org. And the slogan on the paper this month is Solidarity Trump's Hate. And the reason we put that is because we all need to fight him together, since he's attacking all of us at the same time. But as a socialist, generally, I think that's like the best way to fight in movements is standing with people that maybe you don't necessarily have a personal stake in their fight, but you're, you know, putting yourself out there to fight for them because you know your liberation is tied up in their liberation.
Okay, maybe just a first name and where you're from first.
My name is Eric, and I am from Colorado, but I'm a previous resident of Portland.
Oh, great.
I love what Portland is and what it stands for, and I wanted to be here to be part of hopefully what will be the start of a vigorous counter movement that's needed to put things right again is too quaint.
All right. Yeah, but you don't want to say make America great again. That's been taken.
Yeah, I'll steer away from that. So
I think I know what you mean.
As a former person from Portland, I love the fact that there is this square for public expression, and I think there's no other time that it's as needed as it is now.
So your signs are against Trump, you can't grab this. And is that an organization or is basically just plain on his...
It's not an organization, but it's the logo actually comes from a national sort of campaign to create awareness for empowerment in response to Trump's sexist, misogynistic, and violent behavior towards women in general.
So you'll be at the Women's March tomorrow also?
Yes.
And have you gotten any responses to your signs today? Mostly positive, I would guess.
Oh, yes. Yep, mostly positive. Yep.
Has there been any negative responses?
Not to our faces.
Oh, okay. So we have tried to give a few out, and a few people decline, which we're incredibly surprised, but nothing negative so far.
No, nothing negative.
And you're here, are you trying to sign people up then?
We're just
representing those who can't be represented and that are going to be hurt the most by this presidency.
And do you have a strategy for the next 4 years, how to get through it, or
survive
something?
And help everyone else survive?
Yeah, creating awareness and networking with communities, your neighbors, your family members, outreach, bridge building between other organizations or other communities or groups of people that are different from maybe where that intersectionality would normally happen, and try to create, not only greater awareness, but education in a more formal manner, and raising consciousness about not only why we're upset, but why these issues matter and why they affect the future in the long run.
Is this the issue you're worried about most with the Trump presidency?
So I'm a holistic, I personally am a holistic thinker, so I'm not a single issue person. My professional focus is restorative justice, so I work a lot on...